Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Coach K and Joe Show. This week's guests include IU Hoops great Tom Coverdale, BTN Hoops analyst Tim Doyle, Indy Hoops correspondent Don Schultheis, and DC Broadcasting sports director Kurt Kupsel. The Coach K and Joe Show is brought to you by Harmon Dental Care, Jasper Today, Idea Fusion Media, and the Willis Fence Company. Now, here's Joe Milligan and Ken Coach K Schultheis.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joe Milligan and always joined by the coach, Coach K, Ken Schultheis. Coach, how's it going?
Joe, it's another wonderful Friday to be on the air with people, and we've got a great show lined up again. We've got Tom Coverdale, of course, coming up, and you can't think about Indiana basketball in the decade of the 2000s without thinking about Tom Coverdale. He was also a Mr. Basketball in the state of Indiana back in 98 from Noblesville, so it's going to be great to talk to him, and I know you've got a couple of nice snippets, plugs to put in when he comes in on, so that's going to be cool. And we've got Tim Doyle from the Big Ten Network, basketball analyst, and Tim played at Northwestern and is on every night with the Big Ten Network, and we'll be talking about the Big Ten basketball conference and where it's at and what's really going on. I know you've got some comments to make about the Big Ten conference. We'll probably talk about that even in this first open, and we're going to be in later in the hour as we end the first hour of the show. We're going to talk a little bit about the recent vote of the Baseball Hall of Fame and, I guess, the non-voted Baseball Hall of Fame, and then just some of the things, comments. And I'm going to give my thoughts, Joe, of course, and you're more than welcome to give yours, but I've got some definite thoughts and ideas. I know, you know, we're not too far away from the start of spring training, and if there's a lot of listeners, I'm sure, love baseball the way I love baseball, and I do love baseball growing up with it, reading about it, and just watching it, and it's a great game as well as playing baseball just for fun, but got some thoughts on that. So we'll look at a lot of those things, Joe, and there's a lot going on in the sports world, and the Coach K and Joe Show, we're going to talk about it.
You know, IU basketball, you know, big subject again this week. You know, trivia question. Who are my three favorite Hoosiers? Oh, actually, four favorite Hoosiers to ever play for the Indiana Hoosiers.
I'm sure there are probably guys that either got kicked off or left early.
No, that's early 1940s, a guy named Sam Young from Rushville, Indiana, godfather to Joe Milligan, is my number one favorite.
Then how can you grow up a Purdue fan?
I didn't grow up a Purdue fan. You know,
did you become a Purdue fan?
I went to Purdue and smartened up. But the other three are from towns I lived in, and Tom Coverdale's one because I lived in Noblesville for 2 years before we moved to Jasper, and I was born in Newcastle. So who are the other two?
Well, Joe, I don't know everywhere you've lived. I just remember you living in Jasper, and I know your Rushville connection.
And I just said Newcastle, so who are my other two favorites?
Steve Alford.
Yeah, and who else is from Newcastle?
And it could be Kent Benson.
Kent Benson, yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, see, a Purdue guy can have some IU favorites. Not many, but a few.
Deep down, you wanted to be an IU fan and wanted to go to IU, but maybe they didn't let you in. Maybe that's what it was, so you went to Purdue.
So.
Hey, before we get going through this open, I do want to take a moment and give a shout-out to my father-in-law, Larry Bartley. Larry, of course, has been a wonderful father-in-law, and he's battling stage 4 lung cancer right now. And I spent last night with him. As he battles through it, just a horrible, horrible disease. And Joe, you know any family that has experienced cancer, and my mom passed away from lymphoma back in 2002, so Many, many families are touched by this horrible, horrible disease, and it affects the whole family. Obviously, the person going through it, it just zaps away life from them. But we pray for him, and I want to just say thanks to all the people who have given well wishes and prayers and things like that. But a shout out to my father-in-law, Larry Bartley, and anyone else that's battling the horrible disease of cancer or any life-threatening illness.
You know, when I think of Larry, first thing that pops in my mind is the Labor Day teenage softball tournament he used to host. Just did it for the kids, you know, but it was just an unbelievable experience that we all used to look forward to. And it just had a blast, and, you know, and B&G Tire, which was Larry's business, was the sponsor of it every year, and it was just a lot of fun.
Well, and you know, he did a lot with softball. Him and Shirley both spent decades down at the softball field. And for our listeners who are not local, we're talking about in the Jasper, Indiana area. Larry and Shirley used to sponsor a youth softball Labor Day tournament, and many, many teams participated, and they also put together a team that used to try to win a state or qualify for a national trip, and many young men got an opportunity to play on a competitive level, not just in the state, but on a national level through slow pitch softball. Obviously, Jasper's baseball program continued to grow, and it has been phenomenal under Coach Howard and now Coach Gobert, but there was a time also when youth softball was really, really big in Jasper and DuBois County, and Larry and Shirley Bartley were a big reason behind that. And I know, Joe, you participated on some of those teams that were part of the national tournament down in Georgia.
Yeah, and we had a blast, you know, and Larry and Shirley treated us like kings on the trip. And, you know, for being a 14, 15, 16-year-old kid and being able to experience that is something, you know, pretty neat. And as you get older, you realize just, you know, what they did for you. And, I guarantee you every kid that participated on the B&G softball teams, you know, really appreciate what Larry and Shirley did for them.
Well, they did do a lot for youth and softball in general, and it gave people things to do, young guys things to do competitively, and we just continue to pray for him. And Larry, just a big shout out to you. I've been throwing barbs back and forth with Jim Skillman, one Jimmy Skillman of Jasper, and Jim listens to the show, and he's a sports nut. Also a pretty successful businessman in the area, but we've been talking a little bit about high school basketball in the area. You know, Joe, right now up in the Indianapolis area, the Marion County tournament's going on. Don Schulteis, our contributor, will be calling in later to talk a little bit about that. And down in Evansville, the SIAC tourney's been going on. And Bossy handed it to Castle, who's a pretty good team, with Blake Simmons, who will be going to U of E at Castle. And, of course, Jaquan Lyle, one of the top juniors in the state, they beat Castle pretty soundly, and they'll be taking on undefeated Harrison for the championship of that tournament. So good high school basketball going on again this weekend, and we just want to encourage people to get out there. Jasper's at Washington this weekend. There's just a number of good basketball games going on. And as Joe and I have said before, folks, get out there and support high school basketball and high school sports. But it's a great community event, and it's a great thing to take your kids with and share a couple hours in the evening with them.
You know, trivia question. Other than Skilly, the first person to call in and answer this will get a free lunch provided by Coach K. What was Jim Skillman's number in high school? I even know this, believe it or not.
Let me tell you, I don't know what his number was, but I think he played at Elwood High School. Is that right, Joe?
Yep.
And the lunch that you win from Coach K, I've got some potted meat and some Vienna sausages in a couple cans that will open up. Otherwise, Joe will provide your drink, whatever that might be. Jim Skillman's high school number.
Yep. Do you have an, you have a guess?
I have no idea. I'm going to take a guess. I'm going to say number 3.
Nope. It's one of the numbers, though.
Really?
You know how,
33.
I know this. I'll tell you, I'll give you a hint. Purdue's, who I consider Purdue's greatest basketball player ever.
Rick Mount?
No. Rick's number 2.
Glenn Robinson?
Yep.
Well, I don't get to win my own lunch. Somebody else has to win that lunch.
Number 13, that's the big dog, Glenn Robinson, and the littler dog, Jim Skillman.
Really? Number 13? I wore 13 one of the years I was in high school. I think it was my junior year I had number 13. Number 51 my senior year, which Skilly has razzed me about. So, what else we got going on, Joe?
Just to touch on it just to, for a second here, I don't know if anyone got to read my blog this week. I did get a little – I know that some Michigan State people apparently got to read it, and they weren't real happy that I called Brandon Dawson a thug for hitting a Purdue player. And I don't know. Did you get to see it on video at all? It sure looked like a punch to
me. I got to tell you that I didn't think that it was as thuggish as you made it out. It was a little questionable, but I know that you are not one to mince words in your blogs. And for our listeners, you can go to the CoachKandJoeShow.com, and we do have a blog site. Joe's been a little bit more active on his blog as of late than I have been. Of course, that will change in some coming weeks as well for me, but I don't know that it was as great a cheap shot as you think it was. But you know, the thing about the Big Ten, physical play is just a part of it, and sometimes those loose elbows, extended hands, things like that happen, Joe. So, you know, I don't know what to tell you on that. I don't blame the Michigan State fans for getting upset with a Purdue bloggist. So you got to wonder if Joe was just trying to get the Michigan State fans riled up. You know, we're going to have Tom Coverdale coming up after the break, and we're excited to talk to him. But before we go to break, do want to mention one other thing. When we look at the Big Ten conference with Tim Doyle, one of the things that I'm going to talk to Tim about is the strength of the conference in general. Right now, the Big Ten has a number of teams ranked in the top 10, top 15. But I was looking over the schedules, non-conference schedules, and it was interesting at the lack of conference, non-conference strength of teams that the top teams in the conference have played. From Michigan to Minnesota, Indiana, Ohio State, Illinois, Michigan State, Wisconsin, and Purdue, there wasn't a lot of non-conference opponents that you would look and say, that's a top 20 or a top 10 opponent. So be interested to get Tim Doyle's comments on that when we talk about the Big Ten. But coming up after the break, we will have former Indiana Mr. Basketball and former IU great Tom Coverdale. So we're going to go to break, and when we come back, we'll have Tom. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit IdeaFusionMedia.com. That's IdeaFusionMedia.com.
Mr. Dorfman.
Hello.
0.2. Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Blades out of bounds! 1 minute and 18 seconds to go. Indiana's got the basketball.
What would a basket do to this Duke team right now? Come on, Hoosiers. How about a basket here?
Coverdale will bring it up. Tom crosses the timeline. Takes it to the right side. Gives to Moye. Moye got hit by Ewing. No call. Down low to Coverdale. Coverdale works on Duhon. Turns, puts it up, and got it, Ewing! Yes! Coverdale is 6 foot of the game. Indiana leads. 72-70, the first time that Indiana's had the lead, I believe. Shot is up. Missed it.
Oh, no.
Boozer. He missed. Tip up now.
New York City rebound.
Indiana won. They got us. Indiana got us. They knocked them off. And they are roaring at the midcourt line. These two ball clubs going crazy. The Hoosiers have beat Duke 74-73. Mike Davis in front of the Indiana crowd. Hands in the air. Tom Coverdale. And now he picks up Coverdale right in front of us. Absolutely incredible. And the two ball clubs now are shaking hands. Oh!
And if we didn't give away who the next guest is, you know now, it's Tom Coverdale. Tom, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you getting on?
Tom, you have to be even more pumped up after listening to Fisho talk through that whole end of that game, and what a phenomenal ending to that great victory. And most people would say upset, but I hate to ever say IU upsets anybody because I just think IU's the tops, but That was a great ending to a great game.
Yeah, I tell you what, you guys listening to that, you got me maybe taking off the rest of work, and I may go to a gym and shoot somewhere. I haven't heard that in a long time.
Are the ankles good enough to get out there and hoop it up? Are you better after all these years? Are your ankles holding up for you?
Yeah, I mean, I all have a little bit of problems sometimes when I wake up in the morning, but nothing that wasn't worth it to be able to fight through that and play in the Final Four. So, you know, no severe problems. And, you know, so just kind of, I wouldn't say I get out on the court a lot these days. I'm more on the golf course than anything. But, you know, getting too old to run up and down, I think it is.
Oh, you're just getting smarter. You're not getting older. You're getting smarter.
There you go.
Hey, before we go in and talk a little bit about your high school and your college days, let's just do a little catch-up for everybody that's listening. You know, Tom, you were coaching college basketball up until, I believe, this past year. Tell us what you're doing right now and kind of give people a sense of where Tom Coverdale is in 2000.
Well, I decided to get out of coaching and move back home. I was kind of sick of being away from family and friends and, you know, the coaching lifestyle. You know, when I start a family and stuff, I didn't want to be moving every 4 or 5 years, kind of how that business works. So moved back home, and I now work for Shepherd Insurance, which is our office is in Carmel on the north side of Indy. I've been here about a year, and, you know, doing commercial as well as personal sales, is, you know, for all of the insurance needs. And, you know, I love it a lot. You know, it's been a great switch for me, and you know, actually having my weekends free to be with family and friends has been a change of pace from, you know, the college coaching lifestyle. So, you know, that's where I've been the last year, and I'm really, really enjoying it.
You mean you wouldn't rather be chasing down players who didn't get in and get their studying done and trying to figure out where the next recruit is coming from, beating the back roads and the small schools trying to find that one? You mean you wouldn't rather be doing all that?
I'll tell you what, the thing I miss the most is coaching the guys on the floor, but I talk to Michael Lewis quite a bit, and, you know, about 60% of college coaching is really babysitting, if you think about it. between academics and then, just keeping your kids out of trouble and stuff, it does kind of wear on you. But, you know, it is a great profession, but, you know, being that far away from home just didn't suit me anymore. But, you know, it was a great experience, and I'm glad I know I would have regrets if I didn't go into it and experience it for the 6 years that I did. So I'm glad I did do it.
Yeah, it was a great extension of what you've had as a marvelous basketball career. And, you know, the interesting thing about going with Shepherd Insurance, you really reconnected yourself with basketball anyway, because the Shepherds and Indiana High School basketball go together. And since you are a former Mr. Basketball here in the state of Indiana, it's probably a pretty easy connection to have between all of you.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, Dave Shepherd, you know, won Mr. Basketball when he was in high school and went to Carmel, which is right next to my hometown of Noblesville. So when I got back in town and we got connected, you know, we obviously had met once or twice before, but just hit it off real well. And, you know, the atmosphere here with, you know, he definitely likes to hire for his salesmen a lot of former athletes. So, you know, the environment in the office is you know, outstanding, and you still get that competitive edge and sales that I always wanted and thrived on when I, you know, played college athletics. So, you know, I still get that when I, you know, in the business world. So it definitely pays off.
Well, and that competitive nature has to grow somewhere from your family roots and from your hometown. And as we talk about your basketball career at Indiana, you got to start back in Noblesville. A great Indiana basketball town, a solid tradition. I mean, it starts building you as a young man, a young boy, dribbling that basketball, wanting to compete in the state tournament, want to be a part of Hoosier Hysteria, want to be a high school basketball player in Indiana. Tell us a little bit about growing up in Noblesville and about what it was like to be a part of that basketball tradition and program.
You know, I obviously, being biased, think it's one of the best, you know, programs in the state just from a fan standpoint. You know, I always remember growing up and my parents' season tickets were, you know, right behind the bench. So, you know, I grew up with so many of those good teams in the 80s. You know, I don't remember all of it, but I was at every game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, growing up in a town like that and seeing, you know, every single peer person in the town basically there on Friday night, you know, makes you, you know, want to become that when you're older. And,
yeah.
You know, I remember looking up to people like Scott Hafner and Tony Edgerton, which I think Scott Hafner played at Evansville, and he's getting inducted into the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame this year. So, you know, just growing up and having that type of tradition of good players, the thing I remember the most is just, you know, watching those guys play and then going home and trying to emulate kind of what they did and what I saw. And you know, growing up, you never imagine playing in front of that many people when you go to a high school game. You just dream about it. But growing up in Noblesville, they definitely gave me a great start as far as, you know, trying to achieve my dream. And being in a big basketball town made me fall in love with the game even more.
Now, Tom, you know, you're our first Mr. Basketball we've had on, even though we are partial on this show and we feel like you should have been the second. I think both of us agree that Michael Lewis got hosed a little bit. But
he got edged out by Kevin Auld. It was a tough one, but I would have liked to seen, obviously, I'm a little selfish and my player win Mr. Basketball, but yeah, he was runner up instead of Mr. Basketball.
Yeah, I have to be with you guys on that one. I've known Mike a long time, and when that came out, I was thoroughly shocked, as probably everybody in your town as well. So, what a great high school scorer he was.
But how do you feel to wake up one day? You know, you played basketball your whole life, you know, and all of a sudden you're named Mr. Basketball.
It was definitely a experience that I'll never forget. And, you know, I'll never forget. I was actually on spring break my senior year, and I was in Panama City. And there was about probably 30 people from my high school that went down there for that. And, you know, I I left a little late because they had the top 40 workout that they had every year, and the guy who was in charge of it said, you know, we'll be calling you on Wednesday between, you know, 3 and 5 if you want it, and if not, we'll call your coach and he'll be calling. So, you know, I'm in a hotel room with about 30 of my friends, and we're all just waiting on a phone call. And the phone came. I'm like, man, I started thinking to myself, if I don't win this thing, this is going to be bad with this many people here. But, of course, the phone rang, and about four people dived for it. And one of my friends answered the phone and said, oh, I think it's your dad. So everybody started doing, you know, just talking to each other. And it wasn't my dad. It was actually them telling me I had won it. And then, you know, it was definitely something I'll never forget. Everybody just jumped up and down and kind of celebrated with me right there with a bunch of my closest friends on spring break. So, you know, after that, I just kind of took it all in and, you know, just said, you know, it just all the times I had worked so hard and extra hours and been in the gym over the summer, it paid off, and it was something I'll never forget.
You know, Tom, that's a great story, and it's even – it's even neater because you were with your buddies and they were enjoying your success and being able to celebrate with you. And a lot of times, I shouldn't say a lot of times, but sometimes that won't be the case. So I think that's a testament to you in how you were not just how you treated your buddies, but how they looked on you and wanting to see you be successful and to be able to share that. That's a great story. And that goes back to Tom Coverdale, who goes to Indiana University. Here's this guy coming out of, you know, small-town Indiana basketball, high school, gritty guy. And, you know, who's your fans love? That guard that can shoot, that'll play hard, that'll get on the floor. He's got some blood on his jersey. He's gritty. He'll get after it. And that's the kind of player that you were. That's the kind of player that we get going to IU out of the Indiana high schools, the Michael Lewis's, the Tom Coverdales, and Jordy Holes's, and things like players like that. When you decided and you're going to IU and you show up, and legendary coach Bob Knight's still the man. I mean, you go from Noblesville to Indiana University. Just give us a quick feeling of what it was like to make that transition.
You know, it was probably one of the biggest transitions of my life. You know, especially I grew up an Indiana basketball fan my whole life, and, you know, basically me and my dad would watch every single game. So finally being there, and then, you know, I'll never forget Midnight Madness. We run out to shoot around, and I wasn't trying to make my first shot. I was so nervous. I was trying to hit the rim. But you know, just growing up as a kid and dreaming about being on that floor with that uniform on, you know, you become that nervous. But as I settled down, it just became basketball and going back to everything that you did. But, you know, I'd be lying if I said every time I put that uniform on, it didn't mean something more to me than I think somebody from, you know, another state, just from growing up with the tradition and seeing it. You know, just like any other freshman, it took me a while to get adjusted to how fast the college game was. But after, you know, I got the hang of it and worked even harder than I was working, you know, I think I picked it up pretty well.
You know, the interesting thing that, and I think most people can see it because we gravitate to IU recruits and then to the players once the season gets going and their 4 years at IU, you go from being really a high school basketball star in your community, and you were Mr. Basketball, but you become one of 12 or 14 people that everybody in the state of Indiana now knows, now wants a connection to. Now, I mean, you become a celebrity within your state. I get a sense, though, that you probably handled that pretty well just from the people that I have talked to who knew you. They always felt you were grounded, always comfortable being around you, that you were the same guy that they always knew. Did you feel different? Could you tell that you had now become a quasi-celebrity within the state of Indiana when you became an Indiana Hoosier?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can't help but notice a change just because, you know, wherever you go, people would know who you are and, you know, want to talk to you and stuff. But, you know, I think the way I handled that best is just the way I was raised and the way I was brought up in Noblesville. You know, I remember, you know, I always think to myself, you know, growing up and looking up to those guys that I looked up to in Noblesville, you know, how would I want to be treated if I was a little kid or a fan of a guy? And that's kind of how I always approach things.
Yeah.
You know, I don't feel like I was, you know, any more special than anybody else just because I got to play basketball. You know, it was a privilege and an honor to be there. And whenever you're in a situation like that and you can, touch people's lives and talk to them and encourage kids and stuff like that, you know, I took advantage of it because that's the same thing that happened to me growing up in a town like Noblesville where everybody's so friendly.
And I think that's really the Tom Coverdale that I've always heard about and one that I respect. You know, Tom, I know you've been asked this, if not 100 times, maybe even 1,000 times, but I've got to ask it anyway because it's just part of the chronology of your time at IU. You come in under Coach Knight, and things go south between the president and Coach Knight and some of the things that went on off the court as well as maybe some on. And all of a sudden, where you came to and what you were a part of changes overnight. I mean, that quickly, overnight. And Coach Knight is removed from his position. Assistant coach Mike Davis takes the job. But in between playing for Mike Davis and in between not playing for Coach Knight, do you remember how you felt in that little limbo period where Coach Knight is now not the basketball coach? The state of Indiana is divided. The campus is in turmoil. I mean, at that point, do you as players just pull yourself together in a room? Are you individually sitting apart wondering what's going to happen? I mean, for a 24, 48-hour period, what's going through Tom Coverdale's mind during that transition, that upheaval?
You know, I think for most of us it was just shock. You know, at first, I think you couldn't believe it happened. And then we all went to the press conference in Indianapolis where they actually announced it. And then I just remember driving back to Bloomington, and it was like just a ton of cars heading that way. I think everybody, when they got there, they didn't really know what to do and just stood around. And I remember the very next day, the whole team went over to Coach Knight's house and just kind of stood there, and he's like, you know, what do you guys want me to do for you? And that, you know, that was the first time I really realized, you know, he's actually not our coach anymore because there's really nothing he could do, and we were looking for answers, but there was nothing to do. So, you know, after that, it was just a lot of, you know, unanswered questions, you know, who's going to be the coach, what's going to happen, how's it going to be? And then it just kind of all unfolded really fast with Coach Davis getting the job. And then right after that, it was just business as usual. And you know, I'll never forget the very – right after his press conference, you know, he came in the locker room to address the team and talk to us and said, you know, I'll see you guys at 5:30. And – I think it was A.J. Moye said in the afternoon, he said, no, in the morning, that's track. So, you know, that conditioning workout that next morning is something that I don't think anybody will ever forget. And he was basically setting the tone. Yeah, you know, Coach Knight's not going to be here, but nothing's going to change as far as your work ethic and the way you go about things. So,
yeah, and,
you know,
and he sets that tone by saying, you know, if you're committed, you're committed, and we're going to find out real quick if you're committed or not by starting you this early in the morning and just setting that tone and seeing who wants to stay on board. Was there a specific teammate or was it a team or was it Coach Davis who, you know, shook you out of it and said, hey, it's over, we got to move forward? Or was it just something that 5:30 the next morning things just got that way? Or do you remember anything specific other than that? Maybe somebody that stepped up as a leader on the team and said, you know, this is who we are today. We're the Indiana Hoosiers, regardless of who's coaching us.
Well, I think, you know, leading up to Coach Knight, we had already been doing individual workouts and stuff like that. It was pretty, you know, getting pretty close to the season. So, you know, we had been having really good workouts and becoming better as a team already. But then after that, it was kind of just like it was 3 or 4 days off, and then that next conditioning thing, you know, we kind of pulled together and came together. And I think that experience alone brought us closer together than anything. I don't think anybody really had to say anything. It was just kind of moving on and moving forward. You know, something I'll never forget about that workout that not a lot of people know. You know, I was a sophomore, obviously, and the workout was so hard that people were getting sick and hurting hamstrings and stuff like that. And only 6 players actually finished the workout. And looking back on it, the 6 were our starting 5 the very next year in the championship game, and Kirk Haston.
Wow.
Were the only 6. And I think that that's a, you know, telling sign whenever you have 5 or 6 guys that's willing to go through what we went through. And not to say that the other guys didn't get through it, but, you know, they had legitimate injuries. But, you know, whenever you have 6 guys that's willing to go through that, it's pretty easy to follow 6 guys and not just 1. So
absolutely.
It was kind of a,
and,
kind of,
you know,
a,
you go through the mental adversity, and then you get thrown some physical adversity, and you find out just what you're made of. And I think that goes back to the type of recruits that you were and the players you were. You were winners. I mean, you were winners. You had to deal with what was thrown your way. It's tough. It's like a tough game. We're down. We got to make some adjustments. This isn't what we thought we were going to be in. This isn't how we thought the game was going to go, but now we got to make some adjustments. And I think that's a great story. And thanks for sharing that part with us, because it does vault you in to a good season. And then next year you make that run at the national title. And let's just jump right in there. You go into the tournament. I mean, in your mind, you have to be thinking, yeah, we can do well, but you don't have an easy road. I mean, the tournament road for you is you've got to play well in order to advance. But you could even play well and not advance with the thought of you've got to play Duke to move into the Final Four. So as you got ready for the NCAA tournament that year, can you remember the mindset, what you guys were feeling, how you felt as a team?
Yeah, I mean, going into it, you know, I think we had won somewhere, I think it was around 8 out of our last 10 going into the Big Ten tournament. So we knew we were playing really well and could beat anybody on any given night. And then going into the tournament, we knew everybody was talking about, you know, the last 2 or 3 years, you know, always getting beat in the first round. So the first hurdle was getting in, you know, and we played Utah, and everybody was talking about that. But, you know, we were so determined. And the 2 things I think we kept going back to and we did at the end of that year is our mindset was, you know, nobody's going to score on us. And I think defensively we were as good as anybody in the country at that point going through that tournament. I think it was really, really hard to score on us. And then secondly, we were going to get a wide open shot or a good shot every single time down. And the amount of unselfish players we had, you know, we didn't have 1 selfish player that would take a bad shot. And I think that really, you know, when you get into tournament time, it really turns into kind of Big Ten style basketball, I believe, just because it's more half court and you got to execute and stop people, and that fit right into our game plan. So, you know, going into the tournament, you know, we were feeling really strong about where we were at, but it was just a matter of getting over that hump of where none of us had been, and that's, you know, winning a tournament game and getting Indiana basketball where it needed to be.
Tom, we have a comment from a listener. Luke Pupholz writes in, "I'm a big fan of Tom Coverdell and how his play helped lead IU to the Final Four. In my opinion, his ankle injury kept IU from another NCAA tournament title. Just wanted to pass that along. We like to pass along. So,
And that's where we want to go next on these on your ankles, and you're going through these next few games in the tournament, and you're not 100%. But let me just say this: nobody's really 100%. But you're dragging along physically a little bit more than a lot of other players might have been. But Tom, you made two points that I wanted to kind of push a little bit to the younger listeners we have who maybe are at the age where they're still playing basketball. You talked about we believe we could defend anyone. And you talked about good shots. No one on the team was a selfish player. So those are two key things that I think a lot of individual players and teams need to realize. If you want to be successful, those are two things you can do every night out: play defense and take good shots. And that's where the mindset of your team was, and I think that's the exciting thing as you go in and you take on Duke. I mean, let's face it, there wasn't a lot of people in the kingdom, that is Indiana, that really thought we were going to take Duke out at that point. And you're going into that game hobbling a little bit, but what's the sense of the team as you get ready to play Duke?
Well, we knew going into that game that we would have a chance to beat them as long as we played as well as we could. But being a 12-point underdog, we knew that we were going to get their best shot and they were going to make runs. We just had to sustain their run, and that's what they kept telling us the whole week. So we had that in our head. And then, if you remember, in the first half, I think they were up 17 points at one time. And, you know, we knew that they were going to make a run, but we were good enough to make a run. And then in that second half when we started, you know, we kind of got out of, we didn't guard as well as we should have in the first half. But once we kicked back into gear in the second half, we started getting stops and making a run. We knew that the momentum would keep carrying over. And, and Duke hadn't been in a really, really close game in a while because they were just dominating everybody. So I think that kind of – once we got on a roll and everything started, snowballing our way, it really worked to our advantage because, for anybody that was there, they knew that the whole gym was on our side. So it was almost like a home game. So, and that's the thing about the tournament. You know, any 2 minutes in any game – can change the momentum, and when you're a good enough team to get to the Sweet 16, you're good enough to make a big run, and that's exactly what we did.
And when the shot goes in, what are you thinking? You got the ball, you take the shot, it goes in. What are you thinking?
Be honest with me, we got to get a stop and get this rebound. You're so in into the game, you don't have time to celebrate. I hadn't had a great offensive game that game and was in foul trouble, but I just knew, once we hit that shot and got over the hump and took the lead, that they were going to start to take wild and bad shots. And so we really just get back and let's finish this thing off.
Yeah, I love that your answer right away was we got to get back and get a stop. And again, that's what the good, solid player is thinking. He's not thinking about what he just did. He's thinking about what we have to do. And that was really the answer I was hoping to hear. And you didn't disappoint, and you shouldn't, because you're a great player for Indiana University. You go to the Final Four. It's down at Atlanta. I was actually there. In fact, I was able to sit about four rows off the floor because I snuck down and passed one of the ushers and one of the people at Kansas let me sit close to the floor. And what a weekend that had to be for you.
Yeah, I mean, it was unbelievable. They just growing up and watching every Final Four, is what you dream of. And to actually be there, I'll never forget after we won our first game and beat Oklahoma, we were the first game. So Maryland and Kansas were playing, and we kind of came out, and they had a little section for us to sit in, and Jared Odell kind of looked at me and goes, man, were there this many people here when we were playing? And I said, yeah, this is a lot, but that just kind of shows you how focused we were. And yeah, it was an unbelievable atmosphere that we'll never forget, but you're so wrapped up in the moment that, you know, you're not worried about all the other distractions. But to be able to play in an atmosphere like that in front of that many people and for a school that you dreamed about playing for is obviously something you'll never forget.
Well, as we end up the segment, Tom, and we've taken more time from you than we, you're very gracious, and we certainly appreciate it. But as you're in that Final Four and you win and you're going into that final game, were you able to exhale at all and say, look where we were 2 years ago with the turmoil and the controversy and how we pulled this thing together and we're playing for a national championship against Maryland? Or did that exhale come a little bit later? Was there any moment where those thoughts kind of ran through your mind and you thought, how do we get here compared to where we were 2 years ago?
You know, I think everybody individually had moments like that where thinking about where they came from and dreaming about being in this moment. I mean, you couldn't help not to, you know, leading up to the game, the day of the game and the day before the game. But, you know, I don't think we really were thinking about, you know, what we had been through 2 years ago, because you're so, you know, in tune to what's going on and what you have to do that, you know, there really wasn't any negative thoughts of where we came from. But I think everybody individually and silently probably was thinking, I know I was, that, you know, how far you had come as a basketball player to get where you wanted to be.
Well, it was an awesome, awesome time in Indiana Hoosier basketball history, and you were a big, big part of it. And Indiana Hoosier basketball players are never forgotten. They continue to go on and on. And Tom Coverdale, we appreciate you spending time with us here on the Coach K and Joe Show.
All right. Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, good luck with your insurance career. And who knows, you may get back into coaching. You can never say never. That hoop ball is just tough to get rid of. Thanks for being on. We certainly appreciate it. We're going to go to break. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
A hamburger? No, a cheeseburger. I want a hot dog. I want a milkshake. I want potato
chips. You'll get nothing and like it.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show, and we're joined by Indy Hoops, high school hoops correspondent, Don Schulteis. Don, how's it going today?
It's going great up here in Indianapolis. We're getting belted in for a big weekend of high school basketball. So looking forward to giving you a brief update on things.
I know you're going to the Marion.
Don, let's jump right into it. Give us some update on the Marion County tournament. What's going on?
Well, we have started the Marion County tournament earlier this week, and we've got the semifinals going on tonight at Southport with Lawrence North playing Indianapolis Pike. Lawrence North is 11-1, Indianapolis Pike 11-0. They're squaring off at 6 p.m. And I have to tell you, Lawrence North, saw them play a couple of weeks ago. They're playing very solid. They're much improved from last year. I think they had to go through a bit of a transition with a couple of new transfers that had come in last year, but they're starting to hit on all cylinders, and they feed in this sectional with Warren Central, Lawrence North, Cathedral Tech, among others, and it's going to be probably one of the best, if not the best, in the state. That game will be followed by the other – two semifinalists, Park Tudor, who you may recall Trevon Blewett plays for, two-time defending champ in 2A. They're 10-1, and they play Devin Davis and Warren Central, who, you know, Warren Central started off the year on fire. They'd won, I think, five in a row. Then they dropped four out of their last five. They come into the game 7-4, but I think they appear to be back on track, and I really anticipate that to be a great semifinal. And then the final game will be played tomorrow for the Marion County. And for your listeners that don't know, for those schools that are in the Indy metro area that are outside the Indianapolis city limits, they play in the Marion County tourney. Next week starts the Indianapolis City Tourney, which will include Indianapolis Cathedral, all the Indianapolis public schools, including Arsenal Tech, where Lyles plays for. So they'll start Tuesday, and we've got Cathedral versus Indianapolis Howe squaring off in the first game, and on the other side of the bracket it'll be Indianapolis Tech versus Indianapolis Manual, and several other contests, including teams with Northwest, Indianapolis Northwest playing really well, Indianapolis Cecina in 2A playing well, and Cardinal Ritter, another school in 2A that's playing well. Those are, I think, dark horses. I really anticipate Indianapolis Cathedral and Indianapolis Tech squaring off in the final next Saturday. Now, it's going to take four games in order for these teams to work through the city tournament, but I do anticipate that Cathedral and Tech will be playing each other for the third time this year. They started off the year and played a regular season game. I think it was about the second or third week of the season. Then they played in the finals of the Hall of Fame Classic on the 27th of December. And if all goes as planned, they'll play again next Saturday, and they'll have a chance to play each other a fourth time if both would be squaring off in the sectional. So pretty exciting. I will tell you that Cathedral has been up and down. Colin Hartman, the Indiana recruit, is back. I saw him play against Carmel the other night. They dropped that contest. I think it was 60-54. Colin had a very solid performance. He looks good. But Cathedral overall just not playing with a lot of chemistry right now. And I don't know if it's been the absence of Colin Hartman or, you know, some other things that they got to work out. There's a lot of season left, so they've got some time to kind of put the pieces of the puzzle together. And I will have to say Indianapolis Tech is hitting on all cylinders. I saw them play in the finals of that Hall of Fame Classic against Cathedral. I saw them in the afternoon game against Fort Wayne Northrop. And I'll tell you, Indianapolis Tech just seems to really be tough and getting better. And Trey Lyles, the 6'10 junior, is leading that team. And I saw him in the afternoon game against Fort Wayne Northrop posting up on the block. They sent four guys to contain him, and he kind of did a, you know, with his right shoulder, he kind of faked and leaned in to the outside and then did a spin move around two guys and did a reverse slam dunk that I'd never seen that by a high school player before. You know, I don't want to hype it up too much, but for me, he's the best high school player I have ever seen live at 6'10".
Well, and I've heard that from a number of people. I think the best high school player I had seen, and I have not seen him live yet, was Sean Kemp when he was coming through. He was just an incredible – well, you know how big he was, and he could
yes,
dominate a game as well. But, Don, when you look at a team like – Cathedral, who's trying to get Colin Hartman back in the fold, and you said, you know, there may be some, you know, it's tough when you're playing the type of competition that's being played up in Indianapolis. There's just no time to have a way to just easily work your way back in. You guys, they're beating each other up every week, game after game, especially when the city tournament gets going.
Yeah, I would compare it to like the Big Ten season. I mean, I was just thinking about it earlier today as I was getting some notes together, and I thought, man, from week to week, these teams are playing each other, and just and then they'll have to play, you know, in the city tournament or the Marion County tournament, and there's really no time to rest. I mean, you've got coming off the Hall of Fame Classic, a team like Cathedral ends up playing at Lafayette Central Catholic, but then they come back and play Carmel, and then tomorrow night they're playing a team from Detroit Romulus. It's supposed to be really talented. You know, Tech comes out of that classic and plays Lawrence Central, and then they're going to play a very solid Indianapolis Northwest team tonight, and then go right into the city tournament next week and have to play four games and probably Cathedral again at the end of the week to win it. So week to week, I think the records are going to be adjusted. But, Coach, I will tell you, right now at kind of the mid-season point, my top three teams up here, probably number three would be Carmel. They're 9-1. I saw them play on Wednesday night, and they are one of the toughest teams from the standpoint of they just play you tough. They start three guards. Two of them are twin brothers, the Volovic twins. They're seniors. They're coming off a state championship from last year. And in addition to that, they have Zach McRoberts, which is Josh McRoberts' brother. He's a junior, 6'7", and getting better every game. They are one of the most disciplined, well-coached teams. You know, your guest, Tom Coverdale, talked about taking good shots. They just continue to come down possession after possession, run their offense. They were extremely disciplined not to take a bad shot, and they'd end up breaking down the defense or finding a hole in the defense after four or five, sometimes six, seven passes before they look for a shot. So I think they are getting better. Their biggest Achilles heel might be matching up with somebody that's got a bigger team than them and that are just as mentally tough. My second team right now is Indianapolis Tech. They're 10-1, and I've bragged on Trey Lyles for weeks now, but he is the real deal. And if any of your listeners have a chance to watch him play, they'll have the rest of this year and next year. I cannot believe that he's a junior. I think he is. I think right now, unless he gets hurt or something changes, he'll probably be one and done in college. So I anticipate him going to Kentucky and playing for Calipari for 1 year. But you know that might be different. But they are playing well. They got beat earlier in the year by Brebeuf, which is a 3A team. Brebeuf's a good team, but in no way do I think they match up with Indianapolis Tech. But I think it took that loss, and I think it was the third game of their season that pulled them together, because they have just really caught on fire. They believe in what Coach John Delaney's teaching them about defense, team defense, and playing every possession. And they just seem to be getting better and better. And I gauge that off just seeing them play Cathedral early in the season versus how they play them in the Hall of Fame Classic. And then the best team up here right now, and this could change, might change as early as tonight or tomorrow night, because Pike's playing LN tonight, and they'll probably have to play the play Warren Central, but could play Park Tudor tomorrow night. But it's Indianapolis Pike. They're 11-0. They are led by three guards, Jordan Pickett, Tashawn Johnson, and Xavier Turner. All three are averaging kind of mid-teens in points per game. They are one of only 18, and this statistic is as of last Monday, but there were only 18 unbeaten teams left in the state, and they're one of them. and they played a tough schedule up here. They've already played North Central and Ben Davis and others, and so they are for sure right now the best, I think the best high school basketball team in the metro area.
Well, Don, that is great stuff, and I've been saying all year there is some great basketball up in Indianapolis with some great players. We get great basketball down here, but we're talking about top-level basketball players and teams up in the Indianapolis area. Great stuff again, Don. Come back later in the show and join us for the rant if you can. We're going to get ready to end this segment. We've got Tim Doyle from the Big Ten Network coming up next, and we're going to talk Big Ten Conference. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Are you in the market for a new fence? Look no further than the Willis Fence Company. Willis Fence Company offers wood fences, chain link fences, aluminum and iron fences, and polyvinyl fences. Give fence professional Joe a call at 630-2449 for a free estimate today. The Willis Fence Company, a fence for every taste and budget.
Screw around. They're serious this time.
Take it easy. I'm in pre-law, man.
Thought you're pre-med.
What's the difference?
Ladies and gentlemen, I'll be brief.
I think he's empty.
The issue here is not whether we broke a few rules or took a few liberties with our female party guests. We did. But you can't hold a whole fraternity responsible for the behavior of a few sick, perverted individuals. For if you do, then shouldn't we blame the whole fraternity system? And if the whole fraternity system is guilty, then isn't this an indictment of our educational institutions in general? I put it to you, Greg. Isn't this an indictment of our entire American society? Well, you can do what you want to us, but we're not going to sit here and listen to you badmouth the United States of America. Gentlemen!
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show, and we're joined by Big Ten hoops analyst Tim Doyle. Tim, I've got to quickly tell you that my sixth grade son, Reese, was not happy that I did not let him stay home and listen to Tim Doyle, because he's a Big Ten Network junkie, and he wanted to ask you a question, but he never gave me a question to ask you.
So. Oh, well, too bad. Yeah, the Big Ten Network, guys, I've been there since day one, and when I started working there, I remember thinking to myself, I was like, is anybody going to really watch this? You know what I mean? Like, and look what it's done, not only for the Big Ten, but to all of college sports. I mean, it's basically changed the entire landscape of college sports, because you got to give Commissioner Jim Delaney a lot of credit. He had the foresight that I obviously clearly did not have, as this is just completely blown up, and that's why a lot of these conferences are realigning and changing names and reforming, is because, you know, of all the money that's in the television business.
Hey, Tim, this is Coach K, and you're exactly right. Your point is spot on. The Big Ten Network may have a huge impact in how these conferences are changing and realigning because of the money and the revenues. But you were there from the beginning, and it must have been a savvy New York kid who ended up in Chicago at Northwestern, and you must have a lot of brains. You can't be that lucky.
You know, I did. I kind of stepped in it, if you know what I mean. And in this business, you know, a lot of it is timing. You know, I was in the right place. I think if I graduated a year later or a year earlier, then I had graduated. I was a fresh face. I mean, I was a very mediocre player at best on a really, really bad team. But I was able to express myself and make fun of myself, as well as make it easier for the viewer to watch a game and maybe learn something. I think everybody watches TV to be, number one, entertained, and number two, to maybe learn something. Now, the Kardashians are proving me wrong, because everybody watches them, but normally when I watch TV, well, at least they're entertaining people, but I also try to learn at least something when I'm watching some kind of television.
Well, you know, the one thing that I enjoy watching when you're on is I think you're pretty honest. I think you're willing to call a spade in a good way. I mean, if somebody's not playing well, you say they're not playing well. If you're still hanging with a team that other people are questioning, you're willing to say it. And I think that's the refreshing part about you and the Big Ten Network. Now, having said that, you weren't that bad of a player, honorable mention, all Big Ten, did some pretty good things at Northwestern. But let's talk about the conference right now. I've been waiting for you to come on. I'm going to throw this at you, and you give me your thoughts on this. I looked at the top eight teams in the conference, Michigan, Minnesota, Indiana, Ohio State, Illinois, Michigan State, Wisconsin, Purdue, not in any specific order. And I look at who they've beaten in the non-conference schedule ranked. I think 1, 2, 3, 4, only 5 teams, these teams total beat that were ranked at the time. My question to you, and I'm a Big Ten guy, don't get me wrong, IU graduate, Big Ten guy all the way. Is this Big Ten conference as good as it looks on paper? Or is it a result of maybe not the best non-conference schedules?
Well, I appreciate the stats, Coach. Whenever you're going to make a statement, you know, you should have something to back it up. And like you said, you know, you have numbers to back up the teams that are ranked. Here's what I'm going to say about the conference. The top two teams are really good. Indiana and Michigan can win the national title. Now, I think what's proving the conference is worth even more is I actually think Minnesota could win the conference. Now, they're going to need some luck, meaning it's going to have to be a 3 or 4-loss conference and maybe there's some ties, but I think Minnesota is really, really good. And I've been on that bandwagon since last April when Mbakwe was going to be coming back and Andre Holland and Rodney Williams. I could just foresee if they were able to blend that they could be really good, and now they are. As for the rest of the conference, the Michigan State, the Wisconsin, the Iowa, the Purdue, you know, there is not a lot of separation. There is maybe a possession separation from, you know, really all of those teams in there. I think Illinois and Ohio State, even though they're rated really high, are, in my mind, overrated. I think Illinois, they're going to go up to Wisconsin this weekend. They're going to lose. And they're going to be 1-3 in the Big Ten. And that's not very good. So I that was my biggest question with Illinois. Even though they won at Gonzaga and they beat Butler, was, you know, what are they going to do in conference? And for a team that shoots so many three-pointers and they're so predictable offensively, I thought teams are going to figure them out, and so far they have. As for Ohio State, they got one really good player. He went to high school in Indiana, Sean Thomas. I mean, he's great. And then the rest of their team is kind of better than the bad teams, but not as good as the great teams. You know what I mean? They're better than the bad teams, but they're just not as good as the elite teams. So I think there's a lot of question marks kind of in that middle tier, but I think the top tier is so strong, that's why the conference is rated where it is as the best in the country.
Okay, I'm going to throw this out about Illinois, and I agree with you completely. Ohio State, I'm a big Thad Matta fan, and I think he just missed a couple areas that he needed to have some players for, but Illinois comes out, starts out so well, non-conference, the tournament in Hawaii, Maui tournament, I think it was.
Yeah.
But here's what I said about him the first time I saw him play in the Big Ten. The soft Illinois team of last year has reared its ugly head. A team that can shoot when they're on their great shooting team, but physically they just play soft when it's time to block out. And I thought Purdue took it to them. Do you agree in that assessment that Illinois seems to still be playing a little soft in a conference where they need to be playing a lot more physical?
Yeah, I mean, soft is your adjective. I think they're more of a finesse team, meaning they don't really want the physicality. They want to play open. And that's why I think Illinois has played well against Gonzaga, has played well against Missouri. Now, Butler was coming off 3 games in 3 days, and Butler's not very deep. So that was a good matchup for them in Maui. Now, they also lucked out in Maui. They ended up playing Chaminade in the semifinals, the Chaminade upset. So they got a really nice draw. And Butler, 3 games in 3 days, that's just not a great recipe for a short bench. So I was watching all these games, and I was like, all right, when they get into the physical Big Ten, the game slows down. It's a half-court game. How are they going to score? And that has been a question mark. As for Purdue, I thought Purdue was pretty bad at the beginning of the year. They're a team that's actually getting better, and by the end of the year could actually be in the mediocre to good range. I think they're still in between the bad to mediocre range at the bottom of the barrel. But, you know, you talked about the top eight teams, and you included Purdue in that. And I would have called you crazy 2 weeks ago. But after watching them, what Ronnie Johnson's getting a little bit better, him and his brother have chemistry in the backcourt. I mean, the key to their team is going to be the development of Hammonds, and he is really coming nice. He's really come along very nicely. Once he gets himself in shape, he could be the best big man in the conference. Problem with Purdue is, Coach, they don't have anybody to shoot. I mean, isn't there enough shooters in Indiana? Can't they find a couple of guys that can go out behind the three-point line and make a couple of shots? I mean, the state is known for that, and teams are just going to pack it in and force them, besides DJ Bird, to make some outside shots and beat them from the perimeter.
And the sad thing about that, Tim, is Purdue does the other things you want a team to do. They'll play defense, and they'll play it to the end. They'll go after loose balls. They'll battle you on the boards. They'll battle you up and down the court. But you got to hit shots. And they'll stay in the game, but at some point that run happens. That happens in every game, and they can't match some of those baskets, and that hurts them. But we'll see. I still think Matt's going to keep bringing that team around, like you said, and I think they'll beat some people at the end. Let's jump over to Michigan. We got a lot of people in Indiana, believe it or not, that like Michigan, as well as the Hoosiers. Michigan's got some athletic ability. They can shoot it. Gosh darn it, I am just still struggling. Do they have an inside game that can compete down the stretch and be the Big Ten champ possibly, or even go further in the tournament? Help me feel better about Michigan.
I don't think they have an inside presence, but how many college basketball teams have a great center? Now, it happens that the team in Bloomington has a really good center, maybe the best in the country. So I really think the weakness of Michigan is Indiana's strength. That's why I haven't jumped off the Indiana bandwagon as far as winning the Big Ten Conference. The whole key to Indiana's success is going to be Watford. And he's teased us for 4 years on how good he can be. But when he's aggressive and he gets Penn State, first play of the game, he drives to the basket and scores. Then he gets a three. And then he gets an N1. And I could tell first play of the game, because I've been watching him for so long, I said, oh, okay, he's decided he wants to play tonight. Now, it's frustrating for a Hoosier fan to watch Watford because you know the talent there and the size and at the college level, but he just doesn't bring it every night. As for Michigan, they may have the best college player in the country, forget about point guard, in Trey Burke, as far as creating space and getting to the hole. He is really unguardable. That's going to be a fun matchup to watch because I think Yogi is going to be really good. He's not at Trey Burke's level right now. And the freshmen from Michigan have really come along really nicely, and Stauskas, and I'm sure Matt Painter is kicking himself that he didn't get the big dog son at Purdue because Glenn Robinson III is an NBA player. I think Michigan, we've seen how good they can be. I think we've all been like, wow, they're really good. Thing with Indiana is I actually think their ceiling to get better is higher than Michigan. I still, when I watch the Hoosiers, I think they're still trying to figure it out offensively. Now you're like, oh, Tim, they scored 89 points a game. I know, but they also scored 100 against Little Sisters of the Poor, and that kind of skews your average a little bit. I think they're a team that when Yogi and Holes and Sheehy, they almost have too many good guys that they're trying to figure out, all right, what is the rotation right now? Can Perea actually help us as the season goes on? So I'm still giving the conference edge to Indiana, but Michigan and Indiana could easily both be in the Final Four at the end of the day.
I agree that the ceiling for Indiana is higher, and the offensive end is the thing that puzzles me because they're not sure, are we just going to just penetrate and shoot? Are we going to move the ball? Are we going to kick it in, kick it out? Are we going to skip it? Are we going to screen on it? And we still haven't seen Cody Zeller, who I think is a great talent, a great player, a smart player. He still hasn't become comfortable and said, this is my team and I need to step up. And, again, I think you've said it before, and I think most people who watch this game, it's not a matter of Cody getting the ball and scoring. It's just a matter of Cody touching that ball, getting a lot of touches, kicking it in, kicking it out, moving that basketball, forcing that defense to have to make some commitments somewhere on the court, on the inside, to open up that penetration game without it just being a dribble down the court, dribble penetration. So I agree. I think Indiana's got a big ceiling. Does Cody Zeller ever find that comfort level, Tim, where he steps up and says, this is my team, this is my court?
I know. It's almost hard to see because he's not very emotional, you know. And I live in Chicago, and Lovie Smith just got fired because he didn't show enough motion. You know, it's like the guy won 10 games this year, but he wasn't showing that emotion. And so some people need to see that. I would like to see it a little bit more out of him as far as, like, getting in Yogi's face or getting in Holden's face. Like, throw me the ball. I'm the best player in the country. That's just not his personality. I think, Coach, when you're talking about Indiana's offense, I think the key word is identity. You know, what is their identity? Are they a running team? Are they a half-court team? In the half-court, did they go through Zeller? Are they a three-point shooting team? They do all these things well. I'm just not sure what they do great. And that's what they're going to have to decide over the next 2 months. Now, they may not be able to figure it out, and that might be something that drags on all year. But I have confidence in Tom Crean that he's going to be able to figure out the rotation. Let's not forget, I think he sent a message to Watford and Zeller, not having them on the court against Butler for the last possession. I think it was a sign that he didn't like how tough or how not tough they were against the Butler team. So, you know, they're one possession away from being undefeated and still number one in the country. So I think we just have to slow down a little bit. I think they're going to beat Minnesota handily this weekend at home. So I have not lost confidence at all in Indiana.
Okay, let's jump to Michigan State. Here's a team that came out, beat Kansas early in the year. Where are we at in the maturity of this team, in its leadership? Can it step up to the top of the Big Ten at some point? I think Tom Izzo is very capable of putting together the game plan to beat anybody in the Big Ten. What do you see when you look at Michigan State? Always a bellwether of the Big Ten. What do you see in this year's team?
Yeah, it helps to put together a game plan when you have McDonald's All-Americans everywhere. And he has that. You know, he has great high school players at the college level. So I think Tom Izzo is a wonderful coach, but he also has a lot of talent. And talent-wise, I would put Michigan State up against Indiana or Michigan or Minnesota. There just seems to be something missing. And I've watched them play every game, and I'm just like, I really can't put my finger on it. But right now they've figured it out. They're winning games. They're, what, 2-1 in conference. Their only loss is at Minnesota. So they're figuring out ways to win, and they're bringing along some young guys in Valentine and Harris. Michigan State's a team I don't see losing more than 5 conference games, and I could see them easily knocking off Indiana or Michigan or Minnesota, especially at home in East Lansing. As far as buying them for a Final Four team, I don't see them with that kind of potential. I mean, that's what Tom Izzo has done to us. That's kind of the bar that we expect Michigan State to be at every year. You know, are they a Final Four team? I would say right now it's a little bit of a long shot, but as far as winning games in conference, I mean, they're going to be a tough out each and every night.
So you're still pretty high on Minnesota overall, but you think IU's going to take it to them?
I think Indiana's going to win that game because I watched the Penn State game, and Indiana threw the ball away like 17 times. They did 17 or 18 turnovers, and they won that game handily. Now, I know Penn State is really, really bad, but I could just see there was a spark or two early in that game where I said, okay, I could see them turning the corner a little bit. Fast forward to Minnesota, they have an emotional win over Illinois. They're really high on themselves. I mean, this is a very hard game. After winning at Illinois, now you go back on the road. It's Indiana's first game after the new year. It's their first conference game at home. That's what I mean. So the crowd is going to be really good. I question if it's going to be great, even though it's a noon tip. I know sometimes you Hoosier fans are a little spoiled. Maybe you had Knicks the night before or Kilroy's. You have a tough time getting up early in the morning, kind of get the booger out of your eye a little bit. But the crowd is electric down there. I really like the Hoosiers to win that game. I said this yesterday, by 8 points or more. I think this is a game they can really control. And I think the matchup, their strengths kind of play to what Minnesota doesn't do well. I really like Indiana in that game.
How about Minnesota's depth overall? Do you think they're deep enough to make that big run in the Big Ten?
Yeah, I think Minnesota is an Elite Eight team. I really believe that in my heart. Like, I would be shocked if they don't get to the Sweet 16. And then anything can happen, especially the way college basketball is, the bracket breaks down. They're just really well-balanced. And in college basketball, that's why I think the three teams we've talked about in Indiana, Michigan, and Minnesota, the key word is balance. they can beat you in many different ways. They can score on the outside. They can play good defense. They can score on the inside. I think the teams that are in that 4-8 pattern, like Purdue, like Wisconsin, like Illinois, like Ohio State, they have just question marks. Like, they don't have that balance. Purdue's great defensively. They're pretty good in transition, but they can't shoot the three. You know, Illinois, all three, no inside play. Like, there's no balance in between those middle teams. That's why I think Minnesota is a complete team. That's why I'd put them in that category of Michigan and Indiana. They're going to be really tough on any given night.
I love it. I'm just nailing you here, right, left, and you're just coming back with bullets, man. Iowa. I got to ask you about Iowa. I saw Iowa play IU, of course, on TV.
Yeah.
And I see all these freshmen out there. And I'm thinking they're beating Indiana up and down the court in transition, exposing maybe Indiana not being ready to get back. I mean, does this Iowa team have some potential going forward? Or are we just going to see pieces that don't come together for Iowa?
I think the potential is definitely there going forward. I think the problem is, Coach, I think people thought it was going to happen this year. And I got to admit, I thought they were close to turning that corner this year. I thought they were right on the cusp. Before conference play started, I thought they would get in. And they lose a close game last night at home to Michigan State. So now they're 0-3 in conference. And you know, they have no bad losses. They lost to Indiana, Michigan, and Michigan State. But you're 0-3, and now you go to Evanston to play Northwestern, and it's a tricky game because now all the pressure's on you to win. You're on the road. Northwestern's playing with house money. You lose that game, you're 0-4, and then basically your NCAA hopes are gone. So all the pieces are there. I mean, they're going to be a top-5 team in the conference next year because you mentioned all those young guys, and even their good players like Aaron White and Marble, they're only sophomores and juniors. So next year, they're going to be really good. I think maybe I got a little too excited. A lot of Hawkeye fans got a little excited that this was going to be the year. And I'm not saying it's not going to be just yet, but I would say now they're more of a long shot to get in than a sure thing.
Yeah, I do like them going forward. And I mean, speed and length and some physical kids. Let's talk about your alma mater, Northwestern. They've solved their problems in football. Are we getting any closer on the basketball side?
No. Not no, and the thing is, you know, the window was to go to the tournament probably in the last legit 4 years. I mean, John Schoener leaves as Northwestern's all-time leading scorer, and you have so many years there where they're 8-10 or the 22 wins, they don't get in, you know, and now the window this year is closed. And, you know, does it open again next year? Potentially, but I think they'd be crazy to fire Bill Carmody. And it's not because I played for him. It's because at Northwestern, you're David all the time. Like, you're never Goliath, unless we're talking about women's swimming or golf or tennis. Like, we're great in all the white-collar sports. Like, we want to put our golf team up against anybody. We'll kick their butt. But when you want to play basketball against Indiana, and Indiana has facilities that are just, I mean, as good as the Indiana Pacers, and Northwestern's facilities are no better than North Central High School's. You know, you can't compare those. And so what Bill Carmody has done there has been seriously a modern miracle. And I just hope that they don't make a bad decision, because people get impatient. They say, oh, well, he hasn't done this. And they don't realize Northwestern for like 40 years was absolutely terrible. They were a laughingstock, and now he's built them up to every year they're very competitive. You know, sometimes you should, you know, what you wish for maybe what you get, and then you regret it. And so I think if they fired Bill Carmody, it could really turn sour, and then they'll be begging for him to come back. And I think it'd be a huge mistake.
Well, I am absolutely on your side. I think he's an excellent coach. And I think that if you're not ready to play Northwestern, he'll beat you, because he'll put that team in a position to do that. I know, Joe, you got a question for Tim?
Yeah, Tim, I've got a comment and then a question from a listener. You downplayed your playing career, but you are one of only 14 players in Big Ten history to record 350 points, 150 assists, 100 rebounds, and 50 steals in one season, and to be one of those 14, you had to be above average. Come on.
Joe, I've actually memorized all those stats, because that was my pickup line with girls for like 3 years after I got out of college. It was a very long, so I used to just shorten it. So I used to sell it as I averaged a triple-double in college, but that used to be my pickup line.
We have a question from Mark in Indianapolis. Wants to know, in horse and one-on-one, who would win between you and the great Sean Morris? Present day.
Right now, I would kick his butt one-on-one. I'm 30 years old. Sean's like 112. So it's like Dave Ruth. How would Babe Ruth bat in this era? I don't know. He's like 140. Like, so Sean Morris was a better player than I was when we played, but now, use-wise, one-on-one, I would beat him. In horse, yeah, that would be a different story. Sean still gets up and runs at 5 a.m., and the reason I know that is because he lives in the Evanston area, and when I was coming home from some very late nights, I would see Sean jogging on the street. I'd be like, oh, man, I'm getting home way too late tonight. But Sean keeps himself in good shape. The horse, I would say, would be a toss-up. One-on-one would be no competition.
I think you got the length to get him in one-on-one. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, one-on-one, it wouldn't be a problem. He's old. In horse, you know, there's no moving. You can go spot to spot. I think that'd be more of a challenge.
Tim, as we finish up this awesome segment with you, let's just look at your top five players in the Big Ten at this point. Top five guys that you think have distinguished themselves. And I know that there's probably eight or nine, but just your top five at this point in the Big Ten.
Yeah, I think it's pretty simple. And anyone who wants to argue with this, I really don't think there's a case. I think it's Zeller and then Burke and then Deshaun Thomas. I think those three are locked in as three best players in the league. Now, four and five, you know, you could argue Brandon Paul has been phenomenal for Illinois. I think he has to be in that four or five slot. And then probably the fifth guy would be Rodney Williams or Mbakwe from Minnesota. I think Mbakwe's played really well of late. He's coming back from ACL surgery. He's really blossomed. I think you have either one of those guys. The first three guys are set in stone. And then four and five, I don't think it's going to change too much in conference play. But, you know, it's interesting to see. There's a lot of great college players. And with Zeller, Coach, I'm interested to hear your opinion. Do you think he's going to be a good NBA player?
Well, I'll tell you what, I think that he's got to get a lot stronger. I mean, a lot stronger on the NBA level. He's got to improve his perimeter shot. He did show earlier in the year that he could step out and hit that, but he's going to have to hit that on a more consistent basis. But, gosh, Tim, he runs the floor awfully well. He
yeah.
runs the floor extremely well. He's a smart player, pretty cerebral when he's out there. But you know, you got to get stronger to play in that NBA grind, and you got to be able to pull your defense out on the floor a little bit. I think he's capable of doing all those things. I thought he was a little bit further ahead than maybe I felt the last few weeks of the season. But again, I think the non-conference schedule, the weak non-conference schedule, did not prepare Cody well for these last few weeks, and I think we'll see a little bit more in these next couple weeks in the Big Ten.
Yeah, I think you make a great point. You know, they haven't really gone out and played anybody. And, you know, I thought Andrew Smith of Butler was, you know, Butler had a game plan. They were not going to let Cody Zeller have any easy baskets. And that's why so many different guys fouled out. And I thought that physicality, I think, shook him a little bit. And you're right. If he's going to take that next step, I think you hit the nail right on the head. He's going to have to develop like a 12-footer. Like, he's going to have to start shooting it, and shooting it with confidence. Now,
yes.
I'm not sure if Tom Crean would be too thrilled with that. I'm sure Tom Crean wants to shoot nothing but layups and dunks, but he's got to start kind of expanding his game a little bit more. I mean, I draft boards have him as the number one pick. Personally, I think that's absolutely crazy because he has a ways to go. I understand he's a physical specimen. He runs really well, but for the number one pick, I want somebody that has, like, a wow factor. Could be this good or is going to be this good. And he, for me, doesn't have that, just not yet today.
I think he's an above-average passer. But, again, I think that non-conference schedule that we played at IU left him more kickouts for transition baskets and offensive rebounds and dump-offs. And
right.
not anywhere he had to face up like Butler made him do and handle a defensive player and make that move. But we'll see. Last thing, and we'll let you go. You've been awesome and wonderful, and you better come back like 10 times. Top three newcomers in the Big Ten.
Well, Farrell's got to be on that list as far as I think he's probably the second quickest guard in the Big Ten next to Trey Burke. And, you know, I've been impressed with different things at different times as far as the big shot against Butler he made, you know, but then you see the turnover he made a few plays before, and then you see the quickness to get in the lane. I think, like Indiana, he's still trying to figure out when's a good time to go and when's a good time maybe to maybe let someone else go and make a play. So he would be on that list. And then you got to go to the two guys from Michigan. Glenn Robinson III is an Indiana guy. Can't believe he got out of the state, but he may have the most potential. And Nick Stauskas, just look at the numbers. I mean, he's shooting almost 60% from three. I don't think anybody's foreseen him being this good. And when you're – it's funny. When you're like a 6'6 white guy, take it from me. Is that who I am? Everyone just assumes you're a shooter, and he's more than that. He can actually put the ball on the floor, and he's a really well-rounded basketball player. Coach, I always get a kick out of somebody when they meet me. They're like, oh, yeah, we saw you play. You were a shooter. And I want to be like, dude, I couldn't throw it in Lake Michigan. But I always like, yeah, that was me, the shooter. They just it's an assumption I've just kind of shake my head and agree with now.
Great stuff, Tim. Thanks for being with us, man. I hope you'll come back.
Coach, have a good weekend. Talk to you. See you, Joe.
See ya.
See you later, man. You've been listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Your website is an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a site that doesn't produce results. Whether you don't have a site yet or want to improve an existing one, Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help. Want your site to be found easily on search engines like Google? How about growing your business via social media like Facebook? He can help with that as well. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you. For your free website review, visit ideafusionmedia.com. That's ideafusionmedia.com.
Mr. Bobby, come on down here.
Help me, Jesus! Help me, Jewish God! Help me, Allah! Ah! Help me, Tom Cruise!
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show. Coach, I know we're going to talk the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame here, but I wanted to bring something up that I just read on the internet. You know, Tommy Tuberville was named the new Cincinnati Bearcat football coach.
Yeah.
And you know, how far are we away from signing day? Kid named Demetrius Monday decommitted. I guess he decommitted, but he was asked to. And basically, every recruit they have right now has been told to go look elsewhere.
You're kidding.
No, Tommy
wow.
Tuberville, there, maybe there's a reason why Tommy Tuberville is, you know, job hopped. I mean, I just can't believe that this late in the game. I mean, you know, Purdue being having a new coach, you know, he's scrambling, you know, to try to find people to fill his slot, and this guy wants to you know, of course he is from the SEC, so you know, God knows what's going on.
He may have some people lined up, and he's ready to bring them and. You know, he's not much about putting roots down, so he's probably not much about being committed to players. And I don't know him at all, but that's what I see. Hey, Joe, Tim Doyle was great.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah, he was good. You know, he gets praise and he gets criticism, and that means he's out there doing his job, and he did a really good job. That was good. Coverdale was great, and Tim was great. Donnie. Don Schulteis gave us a great update out of Indianapolis, and now we're ready for the last part of the show. And is Kurt about ready to come on, or what are we doing with Kurt?
Yeah, we'll bring him on in just a minute. I wanted to go ahead and give you a chance. Do you want me to go ahead and get him and bring him back, and you can talk your Hall of Fame rant right now while I'm doing that?
I'm just going to go ahead and get started with it, and you can go ahead and get Kurt, and he can join in with us.
Okay.
What we want to do on this last segment of the show, I want to talk a little bit about this Hall of Fame and in baseball. You know, we're getting close to spring training, and I know we could sit five guys in a room and or five girls, and we'll get five different opinions, and you can sit Major League Baseball players down in a room, and you'll get different opinions. And I'm not saying that anyone listening is going to agree with my opinion, but I'm going to give it anyway because it can. And I've been a baseball fan all of my life. Absolutely. Even though I love basketball and I love coaching basketball and it's a part of my life, I've loved baseball. That was the one sport that when I quit playing it, after I quit playing, I wish I would have continued to play through high school, but didn't. But I can remember growing up, just a young guy, walking down three blocks to the public library in Jasper that they say isn't good enough anymore. But I was in there the other day. It still seems pretty good to me. And pulling out the books in the baseball section and reading about all the baseball players from way back, the Christy Mathewsons, the Grover Alexander, all those guys, Bob Feller, Mickey Mantle, Joe DiMaggio, Roger Maris, Joe Torre, on up through present day, and I still follow it. Loved following Scott Rolen during his career, and hope maybe that there'll be some more. But this Baseball Hall of Fame thing affects everybody differently, and so I'm going to start and give my feelings, and then I know Kurt's back with us, and Joe, and you guys can jump in, and we may not agree, and that's okay, but because I don't care. I think that, first of all, I'm disappointed with some of the baseball writers. Not because they didn't vote the steroid guys in. They shouldn't. I'm disappointed with them on the waffling. Well, you know, I'm not voting for them this year, but, you know, I might vote for them down the road. What are you talking about, voting for them down the road? If Pete Rose can't get in, how can they get in? If Shoeless Joe Jackson can't get in, how can they get in? And this really bothers me. Kurt Schilling, who loves to talk, and of course, who am I? I'm calling the kettle black. Loves to talk. Gets on and says everybody is at fault. Guys that did it and the guys that didn't do anything to stop them. Kurt Schilling, that's ridiculous. You're just putting yourself in a position to hopefully get voted in. The guys that did it are at fault. They chose to make the big money. I get that. They said, hey, if I have a big year, it's contract year, I can make a lot of money. And the people, powers that be, paid it. Okay, they took the money. So they shouldn't get the spoils of the Hall of Fame because they crushed decades of memories and records and things that were real to put in things that were fake. They cheated just as much as somebody who bet on a game outside of baseball or supposedly through a game, although there was no proof that he did. It's clear there. It wasn't everybody. My gosh, you could look and see guys that looked like they should have been linebackers in the NFL playing baseball. Look at them again today, the players that now that they're off steroids, they look like baseball players. My point, and Kurt, I'm going to let you jump in here because I know you're chomping at the bit. My point is this. They ruined their chance when they made those choices. If they want to put a black eye division in the Hall of Fame, if they want to have that area that's for the Black Sox scandal, for betting on baseball and the steroid area, and clump those guys, lump them in there, that's fine. But they do not and should not get an individual plaque. And when I hear the Buster Olneys and the different people say, well, you know, in a few years I might have to relook at it. What are you looking at? The steroids, they still took them. They still put up numbers that were obscene and not possible. We, every one of you hearing my voice who knows baseball knows that if you hit 50 home runs, that was an incredible year. If you hit 60, only a couple guys could ever do that. If you had 40, that was a great, great season, and 30s were the upper levels of home run hitters. And when we started seeing 60 and Brady Anderson hitting over 50 and things like that, we all knew something was wrong. Most of us thought, oh, they've done something to the baseball. And then it was clear it was more than that. But don't give me this in a few years, well, we'll reconsider. And, Kurt, I know you're a sports guy, sports broadcaster. I'm not buying it. They cheated. We know they cheated. They don't get in.
Oh, I certainly agree. I look at it as
as maybe they need to decide, somebody else needs to decide who goes in and who goes out. Some of these guys are, with their way of thinking, like you said, nobody should go in on the first ballot. You know, either a Hall of Famer or you're not. So why wait? If a guy's good enough, put him in. If he's not, he'll never be in. Their stats don't get any better. They don't become worse players as time goes on. So decide right now if they're eligible. They have to wait 5 years anyway. It's not like some of these guys just quit yesterday. You had 5 years to process it. Now you're going to say you want 6 years or 7 years to process it? You know, and like some of these baseball writers, they don't pay attention to the game. As long as the sandwiches are good and the drinks are good in the press box, they're fine with that. For a guy like Vin Scully or Marty Brenneman or a Bob Costas or a Joe Buck who sees more baseball than many of these guys, they don't have a say in who's in the Hall of Fame. And some of these guys that have no clue about athletics, you know, are deciding some of this stuff.
Let me ask you this, Kurt. Should Craig Biggio have gotten in your opinion?
No.
Okay.
Because I'm still holding it in a high esteem. And it's like this. It could be for broadcasters. It could be for doctors. It could be for businessmen if they have Hall of Fames. It's for great players. It's for great coaches. It's for great, not very good players. You have to be dominating in the time that you play. You've got to be a top player in that area where you were supposed at your best to be in the Hall of Fame. Was Craig Biggio pretty good? Yes, but was he a great, great player? No. And I still think the Hall of Fame means something. I still think when they have All-State in basketball or in high school, it's something. It still means something. Not the second team, not the third team, not honorable mention all-conference. You're either a Hall of Famer or you're not. You're either an all-conference player or an all-stater or you're not. It's for great players. It's for good or great managers, great executives, not just very good, but great.
And it's not necessarily just a portfolio of the history of baseball. It's about great. It's about greatness. Yeah. If John Kruk, the Kruckster, who I like listening to and I liked as a player, if he thinks it should be about the history, then they ought to start a different wing that is just the history of baseball, and then they can include these people in that. But we're talking about great players who earned their way, who did phenomenal things with their natural ability, and that's who's in the Hall of Fame. You know, Barry Larkin, Kruk, Buster Olney, I think Carl Ravage, they were on there talking. And Barry Larkin was pretty clear how he felt, and I felt like Kruk and Olney were trying to get him to change his mind. Barry Larkin says these guys shouldn't get in. They don't have the right to be in. And I hope that these baseball veterans stand firm on that. They did not. They gave up their right to be in when they made that choice. They got the money. They got the money. Now they don't get the spoils that come with the Hall of Fame.
Well, and my thing is, and it's not the numbers. I could care less if somebody hits 70 home runs because we know that's a shallow record. It's a shallow number. I have a different take on it. These guys, what about the guys that didn't cheat? How much money was taken away from them when this guy was better because he used that stuff and this guy couldn't perform? This guy may have gotten cut. I've seen several guys that probably could have played Major League Baseball but never got that chance because somebody was cheap. It's kind of like the college football and basketball coaches. You do it right, you don't get the good job. The guy that cheats gets the good job. The guy that uses the performance-enhancing drugs in baseball or football, they go on to have great careers, and then you may fall by the wayside, or your team may not win because those guys are doing it. That's who I have the sympathy for in all this.
And Kurt, you make a great point, and it's a point that I think a lot of us forget. It's not just the guys who were doing it. It's the guys that got screwed because of the guys doing it. And just think, if Jamie Carroll comes 5 years earlier than he did or 8 years earlier, he may never get a chance to play up on the major league level because he wasn't roided up. And so some of these other guys are still hitting those spots and taking those places. And you make a great point. There's a whole level of player that makes baseball really the great game that it is. And I know people say, well, I thought he's a bad. No, baseball is a great, great game. I mean, I love baseball. I love the whole art of baseball. And it's a game in which people don't have to be incredible athletes in order to be successful in it if they can take a skill and work it and make it their own. And these guys took that away because they wanted the money. They wanted the money, and they did the juice.
This whole thing, and then while I was going on, to think it doesn't have anything to do with performance. You get the guy that's never picked up a bat or picked up a ball and said, well, it doesn't affect eye-hand coordination. Either you have or you don't. They don't understand what it's like to go out there and talk to Scott Rowland sometime about what it's like to go out there and have your body beat around for 10 straight days without a day off. And see how hard it is to play big-time sports. And if you take that stuff, it helps you recover on a night game after a day. It's not about being big and strong and hitting the ball 500 feet. Sure, that may be a byproduct of some of this stuff, but it's the recovery. It's for you to be able to lift weights like crazy, like you shouldn't be able to do for a whole week straight, and get stronger and be able to dominate in your sport because you were able to recover faster. You know, where the average guy can't lift 5 days in a row, thus he doesn't get as strong as the guy that did because he wasn't taking and he was hurting the next day like you or I would if we went and lifted weights. It was all about the recovery time and all this. It wasn't, you know, and that's what people I don't think understand a lot about the steroids or the PEDs.
You know, we've got a couple of comments from listeners. First, John Bots Magic Bador from Jasper says, BGO got hosed. What a joke the Hall of Fame has become. And we also – go ahead.
That's a debate. I mean, that's great. I mean, that's what baseball – I mean, you guys have decided who was a good player and who wasn't, you know, for decades, no matter, you know, we're talking steroids or not. It's just I don't agree, but that's what's great about sports.
Yep. And we've got a comment from Luke Puppy Dog Holes calling from up in Nashville, Indiana. Before I pass this earth, I hope to visit the Baseball Hall of Fame, but I won't until Pete Rose is in. Pete Rose is baseball. If Pete's not in, then steroid boys should not be either, in my humble opinion. What's your opinion on that? What's the lesser of two evils? I mean, I'm a Pete Rose homer, so I'm gonna say Pete Rose needs to be in right now. So.
Well, I agree.
Go ahead, Kurt.
I love Pete Rose. I love Pete Rose. I think because of what he did on the field. I mean, you know, those hits are those hits. I mean, but the thing is, and everybody makes a big deal about Rose, about being in the Hall of Fame. If he right now, if what Pete Rose wants, he wants back in the game, and he wanted back in the game 20 years ago. I mean, he could take that Hall of Fame, and he'd like to be in it. But I think what's hurting him the most is being exiled from the game. And
so
let me
ask you this, Kurt, and you bring up a great point. Why is Mark McGwire back in the game? Why Pete Rose can't be back in the game, but Mark McGwire can be back in the game.
Well, it's just because of the gambling aspect. They say that's the number one rule that you could violate in any of the sports, whether, you know, college, pro, or whatever. I think that's what they look at it as.
Well, it just seems a little odd to me. You know, Tony La Russa, he can bring somebody back, but I'm just still...
I'm kind of tired of the whole
thing. No, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just disappointed when I heard a couple of those sports writers act as if in a couple years they would soften their stance, and I believe in mercy. Believe me, I could use a lot of it in my own life, but soften the stance of what?
Well, does this surprise you that somebody would soften a stance or make things easier for somebody or you know, cave into pressure or, you know what I'm saying? I mean, does any of that, the softness of anything surprise you as time goes on?
I know, but these guys are still given the power of the vote. And like
that's,
you said, some of them don't even have any idea what they're voting for. They're asking the guy next to them, who should I vote for?
Right. That's like, you know, whatever. I mean, I didn't think it was that big deal. They didn't let anybody in, so what? You don't have just putting a quote on how many people you have to let in a certain year. I mean, if there's
I think that's one of the beauties of the Baseball Hall of Fame process. You don't necessarily have to have someone come in. There might be a time where somebody says, we don't think anybody's good enough. Now, again, you made a great point. Well, why are they good enough in 2 years, the same guy? But I just go to the fact that another crop comes in, another couple crops come in of players. That's the beauty of the process. It's not an automatic that we have to put somebody in. There's a purity in there that I like about baseball.
Right.
And again, nobody seemed to care about this stuff when everybody was doing it. I mean, you know, the fans liked it. You know, the players obviously weren't going to get bucked on this because, I mean, their union's the strongest in any business in the world, perhaps.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and the owners, you know, they liked it. People were coming to the yard. I mean, pitchers were stronger. Hitters were stronger. Everybody was flocking back after that strike debacle a few years earlier. And everybody had it rolling. So, I mean,
I don't know. Until it became a sideshow and you realize.
Well, you know, but I say the same thing about. We talked about this in football basketball. I know it goes back to. I go back to this, you know, about the guys, the coaches and the programs that cheat in the basketball and football. You know what? I know it goes on. It's great. But that doesn't stop me from sitting down and watching basketball and watching college football games. We all know what's going on. We just do it for the entertainment. And that's, I think, where baseball got into that little deal. You know, people didn't care. They looked at it as a pure enjoyment in that time. So,
let's jump over to Brian Kelly, Notre Dame, and whether Philadelphia Eagles. What's going on there, Curtis? Is he really seriously looking ahead to moving into the pro? And is that such a bad? Would that be a bad move or a bad timing on his part right now?
Well, it was kind of disturbing because they said his interview was like Tuesday morning, and you know that he had to have that set up ahead of time, and where was his focus? But I guess, as we found out, I mean, he could have been focused on all he wanted, and it didn't going to stop Eddie Lacy from running down the sideline or McCarron making those great touchdown passes. But, you know, I don't blame those coaches at all because, you know, they can get fired if they don't play well, if they don't coach well and their team doesn't play well. And you want to coach at a great high level. I mean, everybody gets upset when these college coaches in basketball want to go to the NBA. You want to match wits. You want to coach the best players. Notre Dame's a great football job. But so is the National Football League. There are only 32 of those gigs out there. And maybe you want to do that. And I think, and I heard somebody else talk about this, it would be in the know. Everybody, why would you want to go to the pros? Why would you want to go to the pros instead of coaching at a premier college place? I think these coaches get tired of recruiting because that never stops. You got to do that all the time. You got to get on a plane after you've tried to prepare your team all day and probably the night before to win their next game. But now you got to hop on a plane and chase after some 13, 14, 15, 16, 17-year-old guy that has your future in his hands. And he may say, I don't want to come play for you. You may spend all this time, all this energy into recruiting a guy, and you don't get him. And I think it's a different landscape now. Back in the day when Notre Dame had it rolling in the 60s, 70s, 80s, the Texases, the Alabamas, you know, it kind of recruited itself. Now you've got this core of about 15 programs that you've got to fight tooth and nail for players for. You know, everybody thinks, oh, Notre Dame, you know, he doesn't have to recruit or Saban doesn't have to recruit. Those guys recruit like crazy. And I think that is the biggest thing for some of these NFL guys or these college guys that are thinking about going to the NFL. I don't have to recruit.
And Kurt, and a 1,000-page NCAA recruiting handbook. I mean, you got to recruit, and then you got to make sure you're following every rule correctly, and you got to have people that know that book inside and out, and you got to read it, and this addendum, and this addendum. And just don't have that on the NFL.
Well, I don't know what Brian Kelly's planning on doing. And I don't, you know, these guys have jumped from the college ranks to the pro ranks. There really is no downside. Because you go in, they're going to pay you a lot of money. If you don't do very well, they still got to pay you when they fire you. And then you go back to college. But you're not, you know, Brian Kelly's not going back to Notre Dame per se. But they'd be lining up to hire him anywhere else.
Sure.
You know, when it doesn't work out. I mean, it doesn't work. I mean, take that money while you can. I mean,
you can always come back and have success.
I know
perfect example.
That's not the popular, you know, I'm supposed to say, you know, shake the blue and gold pom-poms and say, why would he want to go to the pros where nobody listens to you, this, that, and the other. But I look at it as different types of animal. I mean, I'm all for these coaches because it's like these college guys that, you know, jump from, you know, program to program. You know, they're going to fire you the next day if you don't perform well. So you might as well be one step ahead of it.
Now, Coach,
yeah, coaching
Duke,
is a tough,
gonna,
is a gig no matter what level, and you do it because you love it, but it's still a tough gig on any level. Let's jump in to this ESPN crap, apologizing for Brent Musburger or having Brent Musburger apologize. I was watching the game. My daughter was sitting with me. My wife was sitting with me. My 12-year-old son was sitting with me. My 22-year-old son was sitting with me. I don't know what he did or said that was so bad. I don't think one of the ladies in the room in my house said a word. In fact, I just looked at my daughter and I said, oh, she doesn't have anything on you, Paige. And I didn't think he did anything that needed to be apologized for.
No, but again, we're in this PC world, and that's what happened. And she gets on the Today Show, she says, I'm fine with Brent Musburger. It's no big deal. I mean, ESPN and everybody in the world had to know something was going to come of it because they were sure as heck going to show him. You know, and that's exactly what did they think when the director and the technical director and the camera people went to that shot? Did they think that they were going to continue to talk about the 35-0 ball game? They cut to that shot for a reason. You know, and there was nothing said that was derogatory toward her or A.J. McCarron's mom. I mean,
people
what,
need
you know,
to get these networks, they just need to get over it. It's just, you got to be able to hold a conversation whether you're on the air or off the air. He didn't cuss. He didn't say anything sexist. He didn't degrade anybody. He complimented her. She's a beautiful lady. I mean, wonderful.
I guess, well, they do those shots all the time, but I guess they did it with a person that was connected to the game. You know, I guess that's what the whole deal was. And it was funny because that was the first time that Catherine Webb had shown up for one of those games. Usually, they like to shoot A.J. McCarron's mom. She had been the star throughout the last couple of years. So I wonder how she's taking all this, Coach. You think she's going to get a little jealous? No, she's become the star. I mean, it's really, A.J. McCarron's mom had become the star, you know, in the last couple of years. Now this new woman shows up and all heck breaks loose.
Hey, I want to remind our listeners that the live portion of our show will be ending in a few minutes, but we'll be continuing on into podcast so you can catch the rest of this rant. Don Schulteis, our indie contributor, is called back in. Don, I wanted you to call back in because I wanted to talk a little bit about Trey Lyles now that Kurt's on the line. And Don's been able to watch Trey play a couple times. And I'm telling you, Don, give Kurt a little rundown on – You're talking about he's the best high school player you've seen.
Yeah, but before I say that, I want to weigh in on a couple things. Number one, the Kelly, Notre Dame-Kelly situation, I think he is really doing himself a disservice. He's out of the country, and this thing is just going on. Kurt made a great point about recruiting and the lifeblood of college sports is recruiting, and he's not responding. I don't know if he's working out a deal or what's going on.
Yeah.
He needs to do something because I know a lot of Notre Dame people, and if the board, I'm sure the board is even, you know, bigger fans and very opinionated and very biased, more than the Notre Dame fans that I know and alumni, and I bet they will not have much patience for this because it almost gets to be a bit of a, you know, it almost gets to be a bit of a farce. So Kelly, no matter what you're going to do, you got to respond and you should be doing it by now, I think, if he's not going. Okay. Number two, regarding the model, McCarron's girlfriend, I really believe she'll be working for ESPN and Brent Musburger was just setting the stage for that. Her Twitter account went from 2,500 followers to 150,000 in like 24 hours. So they got the good PR that they needed. And my personal opinion was Brent didn't say anything wrong. He just said it too much. He should have
made his point and then moved on because he's a professional and he needed to do. So anyway, those are I just wanted to weigh in on both of those topics and get on the record for that. But Kurt, regarding Trey Lyles, he's the real deal. There's no doubt about it. 6'10", mentally tough. He plays, reminds me mentally of Cody Zeller. He just plays real even. But his skills are such that, you know, again, I'm sure I sound like I'm hyping, but this guy, at one point during the Hall of Fame final game, Trey Lyles came out in the second half. He started bringing the ball up the court, putting it between his legs, behind his back to make a move. He either went to the rack to dunk it or lay it in, or he'd get fouled, or he would pull up and shoot a three or a mid-range jumper, and it was sweet. I mean, he's the real deal, and I know you guys got some good players down in southern Indiana, but I hate that IU's not going to have a chance to have him in the stable, but I'm not surprised that, because I think he'll be going one and done.
Well, I very much trust your opinion, and I think that's great, because it is hard for, as much as people don't like to understand this or realize this, it is hard for a big man to dominate a game like that in high school. Either 5'9" guys are hanging all over him, or the officials are going against them because they think they can handle, you know, a big man getting shoved around. So for a guy like that to be able to do the things that he is doing, that means he is really, really good. And, you know, I can't wait to see him play then.
Has he committed to Kentucky, or is that just what you think's going to happen?
No, that's my speculation. He committed from IU this summer, and he was down right before the season started to watch Kentucky's, you know, Midnight Madness or the equivalent to, and having seen him play a couple of times now and watched a game on TV, he could be in college right now starting for any major college program right now as a junior.
Does Louisville have a shot at him, Kurt?
I don't think so. I think they got it figured out what they're going to do. I think that's the backstory on the IUD commitment. And he committed to IU, but they really didn't have any ties to him, and talking to some other college coaches that were pretty much in the know that there's always like a backstory on some of that stuff, and I don't know this to be true or not, but I think he's got a few handlers, and that's something that again drives those college coaches nuts, that they have to swim in that pool. But I think Donnie's right. I think that's where he's going, because the propensity for them to deal with the one and done situation, it just makes sense.
Where are we on the over signings with IU? Are we looking now and wondering, is Cody going to go? We just talked to Tim Doyle, and he says, you know, he's still projected a number one pick there, possibly. Is IU going to? Are we still looking at possible implosion of over recruiting?
I don't think so, because I think a guy like Oladipo, who his stock is rising by the second, may be one of those guys that they talked a little about before the season. If everything goes as planned, or if he improves his game, which he has, that he may be one of those guys that might go early. I would certainly hope not. I mean, I wish
well,
he would stay
well, Kurt,
forever.
That, okay, so that makes four. That makes four,
right.
Maybe five,
yeah.
Right, with Cody.
Yeah.
Who's six? Do they
yeah,
kick somebody
I, yeah,
out?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I have no idea. And they're so smug when they talk about it, either them or anybody else that's doing this, they do it in football too, they give you this answer, oh, it's going to work out. It always does. Well, how is it going to work out, and how many people are going to get hurt in the crossfire?
Exactly. I just, you know, I've said it before on the show.
Right.
I don't like it, and I just think it is you know, another indication, getting back all the way to your Hall of Fame discussion, it's just, you know, what we're doing today in society, it just doesn't, it's just not right. Doesn't smell right, doesn't sound right, and people end up getting hurt, but
well,
I guess so is life.
The interesting thing I read, though, is on Golden Black Illustrated the other day, this shooting guard from New York City, And he listed who people who contacted him lately, and Indiana was one of the people who have contacted him. And I'm like thinking, how can they be recruiting? I know you never stop recruiting, but I think they just about need to stop. You know?
Well, it's just because, again, the kids can make up their mind and go elsewhere too. I mean, you don't think that the people that, like Donnie said about this Notre Dame situation, you think Notre Dame's going to stop recruiting because they know they're going to have guys defect after this past week? Heck, last week, USC lost 6 guys in football. And there's no right or wrong answer, and I guess that's why the coaches continue to do this.
I read today Notre Dame lost one of their top recruits.
Yes,
to go to Florida.
Yeah.
Now, have either of you, were you listening earlier when we talked about Tommy Tuberville basically told all the Cincinnati recruits, you're welcome to look elsewhere?
Yeah.
He's going to find his own.
Yeah, what's up with that? Is he just bringing over his whole recruiting class or most of it? Or?
I just think as an institution, usually you live up with those. I mean, the kid that I read the article on said, you know, I've got a month. I've been committed for over a year. Now all of a sudden I have to look elsewhere, you know?
Well, the way to stop all this stuff is when somebody commits, let them sign. This early commitment, because that's what the best line about Urban Meyer and those guys. When somebody commits verbally, that's when the recruiting starts, because now they know who they're up against.
Yeah.
Let them sign. I mean, that's what you do. And then football's got it all. In basketball, the signing kind of aligns itself with the way the season goes and the way the recruiting goes. But football, they have this early signing period, and that's where all the stuff starts going crazy when they do that without letting them sign.
Well,
I agree with that, Kurt. I mean, I think that if you're committed and you can sign it, maybe they draw a line and say if you come into your junior year, you can do that or some timetable, because you don't want a freshman. You know, sometimes you get emotional as a young person, but after you've been committed for a year or two, I mean, you're there. And I feel sorry for this recruit at Cincinnati that basically gets let go. That's like getting a job in the real world and you're getting pumped up to start here in a couple of months and you get a call and say, hey, you know, thanks but no thanks. You got to go look for a job.
Well,
we're just going to bring somebody else in for that position.
But don't you think the coaching staff has the right to, you know, use his own players? I mean, I'm just going on the other end of the other side of the coin. Not that any of you guys are right or wrong. Can a coach not do that?
Well, I think they do have the right, but I think that then the NCAA's got to change a bunch of rules, because
yes,
the NCAA says that when somebody signs with an institution, it's with the institution, not the coach. And now we're saying that the coach can come in. So there just seems to be a real hypocrisy about the whole thing.
Donnie, I agree with you, and I think this is one of these times where you know, next week we need to gather up old Billy Somm and bring him on to kind of get a little reflection from an NCAA guy on some of this stuff, because I don't see it getting any easier. And my God, how much thicker can they make the rule book? It just seems like they can make things a little bit more simpler. And Kurt probably has it right. If you verbally commit, sign that day, it's done, everybody's committed to it, and you got to move on. And that would eliminate all these verbal agreements.
Then you wouldn't have to go and try to get more players than you have room for, because you wouldn't have maybe somebody backing out. All these coaches want to do is cover themselves in case a kid gets flaky and wants to back out. But on the same token,
yeah. But how do the kids get covered, Kurt? Kurt, the kids
right.
need to be covered.
Right. Well, exactly. That's again. Either way, it's a mess. So
it is a mess, because I don't see how you come in and tell Mama, and everybody knows that these coaches recruit the mom, and we're going to take care of your son, and then 6 months later, we really don't have a spot for him. I mean, it's just, I don't know. It isn't going to get solved today, but I think it's going to keep coming up. It's just going to keep coming up. Let me throw one more subject out at you, and then you guys can throw anything you want. Alabama, Notre Dame, It was a blowout. It was embarrassing. But I will say this. Alabama, with 3 weeks to prepare and get healthy and have fresh legs, they were just dominant. Deeper, quicker, more athletic, stronger. That was some impressive football team out there.
Well, I think, again, Nick Saban's really good at that. And I think these long layoffs have the advantage for the defense. Because there's only so many football plays a team can run. But those guys that are smart defensively, they've got it all covered. You know, especially, you know, the way Alabama has their situation set up. I mean, and everybody wanted to talk about how Notre Dame, how they played and whatever. They would have beat everybody that night. And they did. I mean, but the only thing I will say with Notre Dame, they, you know, they had enough, they had thought they had enough pride, and they had the way they were set up that we're going to try to run right at Alabama. We're going to try to strength with strength and this, that, and the other. I think maybe they should have taken a page out of the Texas A&M book and tried to do some gimmick things. Maybe it would have helped. Maybe it wouldn't have. But
I just didn't think they had the talent to do that, Kirk.
No.
They didn't have the talent to do
that.
They don't have Johnny football.
Yeah, that's another thing. I thought
plus,
maybe
it wasn't even
had
the offense. The defense was just god-awful.
I talk about this with Notre Dame people all the time. And
they
Joe
couldn't
and
even stop Joe Milligan running up the middle.
Well,
that night.
And I talk about this with Joe all the time, too. Until teams like Purdue and Notre Dame, these guys or these teams get quarterbacks. I mean legitimate quarterbacks. How in the world can Notre Dame not get a legitimate quarterback and to run that stuff? And
well, the question is this Keel kid, is there a controversy next year at Notre Dame for quarterback?
Well, I see Keel coming in, and if Golson can't play, and maybe he can, maybe he can't, then Keel might have a shot. Or he might have to go on the, you know.
Keel's
going
to have to come a long way from when I saw him in high school.
Yeah, I think so, too. Yeah, I agree. But, I mean, they're gonna have to find a way to get solid quarterback play. They masked a lot of it this year because Kelly's a pretty good coach, and they were able to do some things because they had a good defense. But you know, Golson's going to have to come a long way if they're going to – their schedule again next year is going to be unbelievably tough. I mean, they may be 9-3 and have a better team.
You know, one thing that I'll bring up is the Louisville-Florida game, that bowl game. I thought Florida – talking about a team that was not ready to play. I thought Florida was not ready to play, and I thought the coach down there at Louisville – had his team really ready to play.
They were not intimidated one bit. They took it to Florida on both ends of the football.
Well, Charlie Strong is great, and they did. They dominated those guys, and Florida came out, and they were going to be a little chippy with Louisville and expected Louisville to kind of back down. That didn't happen.
Yeah.
Louisville went right at them because they got good players. They're going to be they may be a top five, top ten team next year. They returned like 19 guys with Bridgewater, and Strong knows what he's doing. He got his new deal after some of those flirtations with other programs, and they know what they're doing down there. And you're right, Donnie. They didn't mess around with Florida. They came out and just drilled them.
And if they didn't, if they would have executed on a couple of other possessions, how it could have been 3 or 7 or whatever before.
Yeah, they had three straight scoring opportunities where they came away with no points, and at one point I'm thinking, boy, I hope this didn't come back to haunt them. It didn't, but, you know, you've seen that time and time again where a team gets on a run, but, it could have been so much worse on the scoreboard than what it was.
Well,
I just think it's a lesson for people to realize that you can be, and I'm sure the coach at Florida got them from a game preparation standpoint, had a good game plan. But I really felt like the players were not mentally prepared to win.
Kirk, what's the difference between Louisville and IU? I mean, as far as the institution is concerned. I mean, how does Louisville get this going? And I'm not saying Kevin Wilson isn't getting it going, but what's the difference between the two schools from the standpoint of putting a football program together?
Well, Louisville, before Indiana did, they made a commitment to being good in football. Howard Schnellenberger had that vision that says, we're going to play for a championship, and we're going to get this stadium built, we're going to get these facilities done, and we're going to try to hire some pretty good coaches. And and to be honest, you know, they have not played at the same level of football. We were talking about conference affiliation, and that helped them get established and get a foothold. But now they can play with anybody because, I mean, they did make a commitment, and I follow Louisville really close. And this Jurich, he's on it. He's hardly made it. He made one bet higher, and that was Cragthorpe. It didn't work out with football after Petrino left. But you drive by there at that Cardinal Park on 65. They've got a world-class football stadium. They've got the Young Center. They are in the top, like, 20 in, like, 9 different sports. He hires great coaches. They've got some, you know, whether it be UPS down there or Brown Foreman or Yum, they've got great corporate backing. Pop Schottner. They've got it all where they've funneled into Louisville athletics, and Jurich is a really good AD. And I think that's where it all stems. They said it was strong. They said, I don't care who's coming after him. We'll go a dollar over whoever wants to pay the most. And, I think that's where the thing with Louisville football. I mean, back when they're infancy.
Well,
that
Strong is the real deal.
Right.
He's a heck of a coach.
When they first started to say, hey, we're going to do this right, I don't know if they could have bounced in the Big Ten and had this success. You know, I think everything came together for them, and I think that's, now that they're there, they're really there.
Well, guys, I'll tell you what, we're going to have to end this episode of the Coach K and Joe Show.
Rant!
I need to see someone else how to control the board, so whenever I have an appointment later, you guys can keep ranting, and I can just drive to where I got to go.
And wouldn't that no high school basketball talk?
People better get out and watch them. There's a lot of good high school basketball. Bossy and Harrison are going to be going at it. Jasper and Washington are going at it. Who's Southridge got, Kurt?
Well, they've got the big one tonight. 8-1 Perry and 7-1 Southridge, two of the top contenders in that 2A-48 sectional. Perry averages 70 points a game. Southridge is in the top 5 in the state against, scoring against at about 43 points per game. Something's going to have to give down there. And the one loss that Perry's got and the one loss that Southridge got came at the hands of Modern Day. So it's going to be really good. I mean,
okay, who wins the NFL football playoffs this week before you guys wrap it up?
Who's in it? I don't even know who's in it.
Bengals, I don't know.
I'm taking Denver.
I like Denver.
Yeah. I'm not going to go against Tom Brady, whoever they're playing.
No, they're playing
and Aaron Rodgers. And Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers, I think they're playing the 49ers. I think they'll get the 49ers this time.
Yeah.
All right, guys, I'm going to tell you what, we're going to wrap it up. If you're in the Indianapolis area, you get out and watch some great basketball up there, and maybe you'll see our contributor, Don Schulteis, running around. You might see me down here in Evansville or in Dubois County. Kurt, of course, will be doing the Southridge Raider games. Joe will probably be hanging out at some pizza place. I don't know.
Going to the Pike Central Jasper game tomorrow night at historic Cabby O'Neill Gymnasium.
But enjoy it. I'll actually be in Jasper tonight, probably at Wings and Rings later on. So if you're out, we can talk sports there.
How's that new Revolution micro beer taste that's coming out of Jasper these days?
But the Mill House, the Basket Case Brewing Company, I haven't been there yet. You know what, Don? If you meet me in Jasper, we'll go out and try it together.
I've had it.
Joe, get on that. We need to take this show on the road. We need to go, like, have a remote.
Time to do that. All right, folks, we're going to end it. You have been hearing from Don, Kurt, Joe, and Coach K, and you've been listening to the Coach K and Joe Show. See you next week. God bless.
The following presentation of the Coach K and Joe Show was brought to you by Harmon Dental Care, Jasper Today, Idea Fusion Media, and the Willis Fence Company. Join us next Friday from 11 to 1 for the next show. Until then, visit www.jaspertodayonline.com or go to iTunes to listen to podcasts of past shows. See you next week.